Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Pei Dalet Amud Aleph, 13 lines down. Gemara here is continuing to discuss the story about Rabbi Yochanan and others that were slightly more obese. And over here it says, Am Rabbi Yochanan evarei de Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi. The limbs or the body of Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi chemet bat teisha kabin. It's like a flask that held 9 kav. Amar Papa Evarea de Rabbi Yochanan, Evarea de Rabbi Yochanan kechemet bat chameshet kabin. So Rabbi Papa commenting on Rabbi Yochanan says that Rabbi Yochanan had large body or an obesity that was the size of 5 kav. Vamila bat shloshet kabin, and some say it was 3 kav. The Rabbi Papa gufe, and Rabbi Papa himself, which the Gemara mentioned, we saw in Baba Kama, says that he was a bal basar, that he was obese, he was very large. Then gufei kidikure de harpanai, for like the wicker baskets of the location of harpanai, and he was extremely large. The Valley of Tosafot over here asks, what is the meaning or the reason that the Gemara even delves into this issue at all? And he says, elu dvarim nichtevu, all of this is written, shalolo itzi blaz al bnei adam shem kach, that people will not cast aspersions or speak negatively or derogatorily about people who have this, we'll call it problem, or this shape. And I think that comes from a number of perspectives. One perspective is the one of the Machonita, who in the end of yesterday's daf we discussed, asked them, how could they be your children, given your obesity? And here you have Talmidei Chachamim, who are larger size, and we know for sure, and we wouldn't question the fact that their children are their children. So that, again, is one aspect of it. The second aspect of it is that these people weren't necessarily gluttonous in nature. It wasn't necessarily that they were not tzaddikim and not spiritual, but people come in different sizes and different shapes. And that's what the Gemara is pointing out over here, especially someone like Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, who spent all that time with his father in the cave, where all they ate was water and carob. And so you know that he wasn't a person who was gluttonous, yet afterwards he is known to be a very large individual. And that's how we got on this topic as well. With regards to Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, and here now that we're discussing Rabbi Yochanan also having a certain amount of shape or heft or obesity to him, the Gemara now continues with something else that was different or unusual about Rabbi Yochanan, which is Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ana ishtare mishapire Yerushalayim, that I am amongst those that were left over from those the most beautiful of Yerushalayim. As the Balei Tosafot point out, but it's clear in the Gemara that Rabbi Yochanan lives way after the Churban. It's not immediately after the Churban. That's Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who lives right after the Churban. Rabbi Yochanan the Amora is a first generation Amora in Eretz Yisrael. He lives way after the Churban. But he says that I remain, or I'm a remnant of those beautiful people that lived in Yerushalayim, meaning the heyday during the time of the Beit HaMikdash, when there were people that have that type of beauty. And Haman deboy mechze shufre de Rabbi Yochanan, those that want to understand or get a semblance of what the beauty of Rabbi Yochanan was like, naiti kasa de kaspo, they should bring a silver goblet, mi beis silke, that just came out of the silversmith's fire, right after it was fired up. Benamle partsidaya de rumna sumka. They should fill it up with seeds of the pomegranate, the red seeds of the pomegranate. Benaderle klila de varda sumka, de pume. And then you should crown it with red roses around the mouth of the goblet. You should put around these red roses. Benodve ben shimsha de tula. And then place it down between the sun and the shade. How zarure, that radiance or glow that comes from that goblet, that silver goblet with all the red in it, Me'ein Shufrei de Rabbi Yochanan, is somewhat akin to the beauty or the radiance that Rabbi Yochanan had. Ini, is that really true? V'amamar, Shufrei de Rav Kahana, Me'ein Shufrei de Rabbi Abau. The beauty or the good looks of Rav Kahana were a semblance of those of Rabbi Abau. Shufrei de Rabbi Abau, Me'ein Shufrei de Yaakov, Avinu. Rabbi Abau's beauty was a remnant or a small semblance of that of Yaakov's. Shufrei de Yaakov Avinu Me'ein Shufrei de Amar Rishon. And Yaakov's beauty was also a semblance or a small part of the beauty of Adam HaRishon. So here the Gemara has a Mesora about people who are unusually good looking, or her appearance was striking over time. But who's absent from that list is Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan's not on that list. If Rabbi Yochanan was Mishufrei Yerushalayim, why is it that Rabbi Yochanan's not mentioned in that list? The Gemara says, Shani Rabbi Yochanan, Dehadarat Panim, Lo Havyalei. Rabbi Yochanan was different because he didn't have Hadarat Panim. He didn't have that radiance or glow about him. The way Rashi describes it over here is that he lacked a beard, that he had a more effeminate side to him, and therefore he's not counted amongst those men of beauty because he didn't have that facial hair. Again, that will actually, in the upcoming story, you'll see that that might explain some of the things that are said in the upcoming story. The Marsha, on the other hand, references to Rashi, who distinguishes between Yifat Mar'eh and Yifat Toar, that there are two descriptions that the Torah gives when it speaks about the beauty of someone. So for instance, by Rachel, it says that she was Yifat Mar'eh and Yifat Toar. And so there Rashi distinguishes between the shape of the face and the glow or the radiance of the appearance of the individual. And so he suggests over here that maybe that's what the Gemara is referencing to, that Rabbi Yochanan lacked in one of those. So now these stories are very famous stories coming up, the stories of Rabbi Yochanan and then the stories of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. They are well known, and here is the location in Shas where we find them. Rabbi Yochanan ava azav yotiv asherei tvila. Rabbi Yochanan used to go and sit by the gateways, the doorways to the mikveh. Amar ki salkan benot Yisrael mitvilat mitzvah. When the women of Israel come out of the mikveh, I mean, they go for their tvilat mitzvah after they are nidan, they're returning to their husbands. The pagul be, they should bump into me. Keichet avalahu b'nei shapiri kavati, gemiri oraita kavati, that they should have good-looking children like me, who learn Torah like me. So this is based on the idea that what a person sees has impact on the child that is born. So Marsha points out, it connects back to what Yaakov did with the maklot, where he carved the rods out and made them white. And that had impact on the type of offspring that those animals had. And the Gemara in a number of places speaks about the image or the item that is in the mind or the sight of the individual while they're having biyah, while they're engaged in marital relations, shapes or forms or has an impact on the child that is born afterwards. So Rabbi Yochanan, in that vein, says, well, if they see me right before they go home to their husbands, then that will impact what their offspring will look like, what their offspring will be like. Again, the idea of looking at something or seeing something having impact is very common, both in this context as well as the context of illness or sickness, where looking at a person that has a certain status, for instance, with regards to a nidah, the Gemara Nidah speaks about it, and the Rishonim there speak about it extensively, that the sight or seeing a woman who is a nidah can have an impact on the individual who sees her. And so therefore, a sight or seeing has a deep impression on the individual. That's true psychologically. I mean, even today in the modern era, seeing something has a much deeper impact on the individual than simply hearing about it. And it can last or stay with the person for many, many years. And so sight does have that type of impact, and necessarily the physical impact that is spoken about here. I mean, the implications that it has on the actual fetus that comes afterwards, or in terms of illness, but we know definitely in the world of Kabbalah, in the Kabbalistic world, that seeing or looking at something, whether evil or good, has impact. And then we also know that the Gemara in Brachot that speaks about at the time of relations, that if the bed is facing a certain way that has impact on the child that is born, there the Talmidei Rabbeinu Yonah explain that whatever a person has in mind or the tefillot that they have at that moment at the conception of the child will have impact. And so therefore, even if you don't say it from the literal standpoint of seeing Rabbi Yochanan has the impact, but seeing Rabbi Yochanan could have an impact where a person would daven for a child who looks like Rabbi Yochanan and learns like Rabbi Yochanan and is a Talmud Chacham and a Ben Torah. And that's a part and parcel of what an individual needs to do when they want to have children that are Ovdei Hashem. Gemara notes over here that the Chachamim asked Rabbi Yochanan, Rulei Rabbanan, lo mistafei mar mi'ein abisha. Aren't you worried about the Ayin Hara? Because you're sitting there, the whole purpose of your sitting there is so people see your beauty and that you're a Talmud Chacham, aren't you worried about the Ayin Hara? Amalo, Ana Mizara de Yosef Katina. Because I'm a descendant of Shevet of Yosef. The Lo Shaltave Ein Abisha. The evil eye doesn't have any impact on them. Dichtiv. The Pasuk says, Ben Parat Yosef. The word Parat from the word Piria. The fruitful bough of Yosef. The fruitful bough of the Ayin, which is connected to a Mayan, to a spring. And Vamar Rabbi Bo, Al Tikre Ali Ayin, that a bough or a tree that emerges from the Mayan, from the spring, Ela Ole Ayin, those that are above the eye, meaning above the eye, above the evil eye, and they're not subject to the evil eye. We also see Rabbi Chanina, Bar Chanina Amar Mihocha. From this, from the bracha that Yaakov gives to Yosef's children, Vidgula Rov Bekerav Aretz, that they should expand and multiply like the fish in the land. Why does he use the word dag to describe their multiplying? Ma dag shbiyam mayim mechasim otam. Just like the fish of the sea, the water covers them. Ve'in ayin shalet behem, and therefore there's no ayin hara that affects them because they're out of sight. Av zarosha Yosef ve'in ayin shalet behem. So too, the zera of Yosef, the ayin hara is not impactful on them. And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan wasn't worried about the ayin hara. In addition, we know from the stories in the Gemara that Rabbi Yochanan had very, very long eyelashes. There are stories later on, especially when he got older, that he was unable to see because of his large eyelashes, and they used to have to lift them up. There's a story with Reish Lakish's son over there, his nephew. So they also point to that as being a reason why Rabbi Yochanan could sit outside the mikveh and not be bothered or tempted by the women that are coming by, because his long eyelashes prevented him from seeing so well or catching glimpses of these women. So he was able to sit there and learn and not be impacted by being there, also not be impacted by the Ayin Hara, and provide this service to the Benot Yisrael. Yom Echad, so here's a very, very famous story of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Yom Echad avakosachi Rabbi Yochanan beYardano. One day Rabbi Yochanan was bathing, swimming in the Yardain. Chazir Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish saw Rabbi Yochanan. V'shavar the Yardana batrei. And he jumped into the Yardain after him. Amalei, so Rabbi Yochanan says to Reish Lakish, Chelcha le'oraito. Your strength should be for Torah. Because here Reish Lakish was able to jump from the shoreline out into where Rabbi Yochanan was in the Yardain in one hop, skip, and a jump. And he saw the tremendous strength of Reish Lakish. And so Reish Lakish actually was well known for his tremendous strength. He says that strength should be put towards Torah. Amalei shufrach l'neshe. So Reish Lakish responds to Rabbi Yochanan and says, your beauty is for women. That your beauty is something that a woman should have, not a man. Now that goes back to what we said before, what Rashi said about Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan lacked hadarat panim, which is that he lacked the aging or the beard on his face. And that would make a lot of sense, because then he would have been much more effeminate looking. And since he was so, that's what Reish Lakish says to him, that your beauty is for women. Amalei, ihadart becha yavina lecha achuti de shapira minai. Says, if you are chozer b'tshuva, then I will give you my sister who's even more beautiful than I. If you say my beauty is for women, I have a sister who is a woman who has this beauty, and if you come and are chozer b'tshuva, then you can have her as a wife. Kabal alei, Reish Lakish accepted Rabbi Yochanan's offer. He then wanted to return to the shoreline to get his clothing, to get his utensils. He was unable, the same way that he had hopped out from the shoreline to where Rabbi Yochanan was, he was unable to do it on the return. That's because the Torah, or the acceptance of Torah, weakens the individual. And so, even though he had even started to learn, just his mere acceptance of the Ol HaTorah weighed him down, quote unquote, and therefore he was no longer as sprightly or springy as he was before, and had taken away some of his koach that was now dedicated to Torah. Akarye v'atne v'shavye gavarabo. So he taught him Torah, Mishnah, Gemara, and made him into a great individual. Yom echad av mefalge be'midrusha. One day they were arguing. There was a disagreement that was going on inside the Beit HaMidrash. Asayif vesakin vapigyon varomach umageliad umagel katsir. dealing with a sword, a knife, a dagger, a spear, a saw, a handsaw, or a scythe. Me'ematai mikablim tuma. At what point is it considered to be a gemar melacha, which is the finished point of the product? Because at that point, they will accept tuma. An item, a utensil, kli, is only mikabel tuma when it reaches the finished state. So what's considered to be the finished state? Mishat gemar melachtan. The time that it's completed, me'ematai gemar melachtan, what is the finished state of the item? Yochanan amar, mishitzrefeim bikivshan. Once they have been heated in the ovens, meaning that they've been hardened by the firing them up in the furnace, Rish Lakish amar, mishitzach tzachein b'mayim. Once they're put into the water, which causes the hardening of the item. So Yochanan says they're simply being fired up is enough. Rish Lakish says that in the final touches, that when they put the water on them and they polish them down, and they harden them in the water, that's considered to be the last stage of the production. Amalei, so Rabbi Yochanan says to Reish Lakish, lista'a bilistuyute yada. The thief knows his business. And therefore, Reish Lakish, you should be familiar with this, and he would know what the real end of the game was. So Amalei, umahantidli. So Reish Lakish says, what have all this done for me? What good is this? Hatam Rabbi Karuli. Before they used to call me a master or a leader. Hacha Rabbi Karuli. And now they call me a master and a leader. So, Rish Lakish's response is clear that he's offended by what Rabbi Yochanan said. There's obviously a problem in what Rabbi Yochanan said, which is the problem of Ona'ah, which we spoke about before in Advarim, that one is not allowed to say to someone, remember when you were this or that. And over here, Rabbi Yochanan is pointing out, well, Reish Lakish, when you were a thief, you would have known about this. Now, it's true that Rabbi Yochanan may not have meant this in any derogatory way. It wasn't him saying to Reish Lakish, well, because you're a thief, you know, but rather, you as a, when you worked as a thief, you had inside information about this. These are the weapons of your trade, and therefore you would have a good sense of what was the final stage or the completion of the kli. And again, here Rabbi Yochanan might have said, even though I'm arguing with Reish Lakish, I have to defer to Reish Lakish in these manners because he has more experience here. He has more understanding of this situation. Especially, as the Marsha points out, that the purpose of these marauders when they take a sword or a weapon is to show them the sharp edge of the weapon so that whoever they are plundering is too scared to fight back because of the sharpness of the weapon. And so Rabbi Yochanan was acknowledging the fact that Reish Lakish's previous trade gave him that inside information. Reish Lakish maybe misunderstands or is offended by what Rabbi Yochanan says and says back to him, they used to call me a Rebbe and now they call me a Rebbe. What good is it that I've been learning all this time? So Rabbi Yochanan says back to him, Ahanai lecha, I did something good for you. I brought you under the wings of the Shechina. I brought you back to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So the way that Rashi explains it is that Reish Lakish was saying, I was ahead of the thieves, and now I'm the head of the Beit Midrash. I was a rabbi then, I'm a rabbi now. If you still mark me as being a lista, as being a thief, then what good is it that I now came and became a rabbi of Torah, when I was once a rabbi of thieves, if you're still calling me a thief, and you're still saying that that was my profession? That was Reish Lakish's taking offense to what Rabbi Yochanan said. Rabbi Yochanan said there's a big difference between being the head of the thieves and the head of the Beit Midrash. Being a rabbi, you're a tachat kanfei hashchina, you're doing what Hashem wants of you. Being a thief, that's not the case. And I was the one who brought you tachat kanfei hashchina. That's the way that Rashi learns it. The Baalei HaTosafot take issue with that and say that it can't be that's what Reish Lakish meant. The premise for their idea is the use of the term chazar b'tshuva, lachzor b'cha, that you should be chuzer, you should return. Today, in the modern colloquial, when we use chazar b'tshuva, that doesn't mean that the person was previously religious. Then, as the modern parlance is, was chazar b'sheila, that they left the faith, and then chuzer b'tshuva means that they returned to the faith, implying that at one point they were faithful, and now they're returning to the faith. We use the term chazar b'tshuva even for someone who has never religiously inclined, but now has become more religiously inclined. We call them a chozer b'tshuva. But the Balei Tosafot here, the terminology that Rabbi Yochanan uses to describe Reish Lakish's Baile Mahader, that you wanted to return, implies that he was once a Talmud Chacham, or he was once religious, and Rabbi Yochanan was therefore encouraging Reish Lakish to return to his ways of being a Talmud Chacham. And that's the way that the Balei Tosafot explain over here. Reish Lakish says, I was a rabbi before, meaning that when I was a youngster, I was a rabbi, and now I'm a rabbi. And what difference does it make that you made me, quote unquote, into a rabbi? I was already a rabbi before. Rabbi Yochanan's response to him is, I brought you tachat kanfei hashchina, meaning that yes, you were a rabbi originally when you were young and you were learning, but you left the faith and you chose a different path. And I was able to bring you back on the proper path. It seems that Reish Lakish might have been compelled to leave the ways of Torah, not necessarily because some evil inclination pulled him, but rather he couldn't make ends meet or he didn't have a parnasa. And then that led him astray into a field of the theft in order to provide for himself. And Rabbi Yochanan was able to capture him and bring him back to the ways of the Shekhinah. That's the way the Balei Tosafot explain it. If you look into the Marsha and many of the other Achronim, they describe here not literally what's going on, but rather that there was a misunderstanding between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, and that is to deal with two issues. One is Rabbi Yochanan's statement towards Reish Lakish. Why isn't that Onat Dvarim? And the second part is, why was Reish Lakish responding to Rabbi Yochanan in that manner, in which he took offense to Rabbi Yochanan's statement and then says, what did you do for me, Rabbi Yochanan, when it's obvious what Rabbi Yochanan did for him? And so therefore, they see here a misunderstanding between the two parties, which is Reish Lakish misunderstands Rabbi Yochanan's statement to him that a thief knows his trade or knows his utensils. He wasn't implying anything about Reish Lakish. He was simply saying that I would defer to Reish Lakish in these matters, not because he was calling him a thief, not because he was reminding him of being a thief, but simply because he had that experience or knowledge. It wasn't something negative. Reish Lakish misunderstood that and said that he thought he was calling him a thief, meaning in the literal sense, now that he hadn't left his profession in any way. And therefore, Reish Lakish responds in a manner that is addressing that offense that he took to Rabbi Yochanan's statement. And that causes Rabbi Yochanan to be upset that he misunderstood him and said that, of course, I made a difference in your life because I brought you tachat kanfei hashchina. The reason that Tosafot's position is compelling may not be from the Gemara here itself, but from many other places in Shas. Give you an example, the Gemara in Makot, Daf Yudalad Amud Bet. Over there, the Gemara discusses a machlok between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. In that machloket, if you're talking about a machloket in Svara, in logic, it makes sense that Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish could argue, even though Rabbi Reish Lakish was a Talmid, was a student of Rabbi Yochanan, he was a Talmud Mufak of Rabbi Yochanan, and later a Talmud Chover, a peer of Rabbi Yochanan's. And so then it would make sense that they argue in Svara. On the other hand, Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan there argue in a matter of Mesorah. There they argue about a Gzeira Shava, as to whether we are done or not done that Gzeira Shava. That's very difficult, because, as we know, a Gzeira Shava can only be applied, only comes through a Mesorah. If Reish Lakish's Torah came from Rabbi Yochanan, and his Mesorah was from Rabbi Yochanan, how could he be arguing on Rabbi Yochanan about a matter of Mesorah, or a matter that is not subject to Svara? And therefore, it would make a lot of sense, the Gemara in Makot Yudalad Amud Bet that speaks about them arguing in an issue of Mesorah, that Reish Lakish had an independent Mesorah aside from that of Rabbi Yochanan. Therefore, the Balei Tosafot's explanation over here makes sense, which is that Reish Lakish had some independent Mesorah besides that which he learned from Rabbi Yochanan. And then you could explain those instances where Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish not just arguing in Svorah, but they're arguing in Mesorah that Reish Lakish did have Mesorah independent to Rabbi Yochanan. But if all of his Torah was learned from Rabbi Yochanan and he never had any previous experience, then it's hard to understand or explain the places in Shas Reish Lakish is arguing in Rabbi Yochanan in a matter of Mesorah or a matter like Gzeira Shava. So that would also give more evidence to what the Balei Tosafot suggests, as well as the fact that you could explain then that the misunderstanding here between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan was, why was Reish Lakish making the argument that this was the din? So it might have been that Reish Lakish was saying, I previously learnt, or I know from my background that the sword is only considered to be finished once it's been polished with the water, or hardened with the, tempered with the water, that's when it's complete. Rish Lakish was referencing back to his learning prior to his being a thief. Rabbi Yochanan misunderstood that and thought he was referencing back to his own history or experience. Rish Lakish was saying, when I was a thief, I know that. So Rabbi Yochanan agreed, okay, then the thief knows his business. Not because he was being offensive, but because he thought that's what Rish Lakish said. Rish Lakish had not meant that. He had meant what I had previously learned. I had a Misora like that. And again, there it leads to this misunderstanding between them. And again, that's how many of the Achronim approach the story here, that there was miscommunication and misunderstanding on both sides, which is usually the issue that causes friction or problems between people, is the misunderstandings like this. Chalash Date de Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan became upset or fell ill over this statement that Reish Lakish had made, that as if he didn't learn anything from Rabbi Yochanan. Chalash Reish Lakish. And then Reish Lakish physically or literally fell ill because of Rabbi Yochanan's being so upset. That caused Reish Lakish to fall ill. Atai Achatei. So now here we see that his sister, Rabbi Yochanan's sister, comes to plead with Rabbi Yochanan to allow Reish Lakish to recover. So here you see that Reish Lakish did take up Rabbi Yochanan and marry Rabbi Yochanan's sister. The Balei Tosafot over here suggests that Reish Lakish was not worried about the fact that we're going to see in the upcoming Gemara and tomorrow's daf that if he married Rabbi Yochanan's sister, that people would say that the only reason he was Chozer B'Tshuvah, the only reason that he learned Torah was because he wanted to marry Rabbi Yochanan's sister. He wasn't worried about that because, again, possibly because of his background in Torah already, or because it was obvious that his Shkeidan, his Limud HaTorah, was sincere and deep, and therefore he didn't worry about that issue. But he married Rabbi Yochanan's sister, and now his sister is pleading with Rabbi Yochanan to, quote-unquote, release Reish Lakish from this punishment. Kabachya, she was crying, Amralei, she said to him, Asei Bishvil Bini, do it for my son, to protect my son, that he won't become an orphan. Amrala, Azva Yitomecha, Ani Achaye. So there it's Hashem speaking, leave your orphans to me, and I will keep them alive, I will take care of them. So Rabbi Yochanan saying the same thing, I'll take care of your son, don't worry about it. Asei Bishvil Amanuti, do it so I don't become a widow. Amar La, and this is a continuation of that same pasuk in Yirmiyahu, V'amanotecha alai tiftachu, and that your widows will depend on me. And there Rabbi Yochanan says, I'll take care of you and your child. And again, the Gemara also relates the story of Reish Lakish's son learning by Rabbi Yochanan after the passing of Reish Lakish, and that he was sharp like his father, and that leads Rabbi Yochanan to want to see him, and his mother goes in and grabs him away. Uncle Rabbi Yochanan shouldn't kill you like he killed your father, and she rips him out of there so he doesn't get affected by Rabbi Yochanan. Nach nafshei de Reish Shimon ben Lakish. Rabbi Shimon Lakish, Reish Lakish passes away from this illness. Rabbi kamitztar Rabbi Yochanan batrei tuva. Rabbi Yochanan was distraught over the passing of Reish Lakish. Amar Rabbanan, man lezel leit ve'ledate. Who will go and placate Rabbi Yochanan? Nezel Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat de mechadadin shmatate. Let Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat go and learn with Rabbi Yochanan because he's very sharp in his Misora and his Girsa and that which he learns. We know that Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat is another Talmud Chaver of Rabbi Yochanan. He's a Talmud Muvak of Rabbi Yochanan. And he also becomes a Talmud Chaver where we see him arguing with Rabbi Yochanan throughout Shas. Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan argue. So here Rabbi Yochanan has two proteges, both Reish Lakish and Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat, who were his Talmidim, but later grow on to be peers with him and argue with him all over Shas. Azo yatim kamei. So he sat before him to learn with him. Komilta dav amar Rabbi Yochanan. Anything that Rabbi Yochanan presented, amalei, tanyo de misayelach. I can bring you a brayta that supports that which you're saying. Amar, at kibar lakisha? You are like Reish Lakish, the son of Lakish, meaning Reish Lakish. Bar lakisha, kava mina milta. Reish Lakish, when I used to say something, Avamakshili Esrin Varba Kushiata, he has to ask me 24 questions. Mufriknale Esrin Varba Piruke, and then answer me 24 answers. Umamela Ravchoshmatata. And from that, it brought out, or was able to help to solidify and clarify that which I was saying. Vatamart Tanya de Mesailach. And all you say is, I got a brayta that supports you. Atal Yodana de Shapir Kamina. You don't think I knew that which I was saying was good? I don't need yes men. Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat is a yes man. And he's saying, I know what I'm saying is correct. I don't need you to come and yes me, because I know I'm right, and bringing up right is not going to help the situation. What I need is someone like Rish Lakish, who said, you're wrong for these 24 reasons, and then answered why you still might be right. Even though they have these 24 questions, you might still be right, because I have 24 answers. And so he was looking for a chavruta like Rish Lakish, but a chavruta Rish Lakish, who was a person who challenged him and stood up to him and helped him to clarify his positions. Not like Rabbi Elazar ben Bedat, who was just yes-yesing and saying, yes, I can bring support to that which you are saying. Some point out here that the number 24 is significant in this way, which is that 24 questions plus 24 answers is 48, plus the issue itself makes it 49, and that is the Memtet Panim, the Torah, and that's the reference of these numbers here. It's a way to deal with why or the significance of the numbers here. But it's clear that Rabbi Yochanan valued Reish Lakish's challenges and his ability as a peer to challenge him and not allow him just to say things, but rather to force him to really think through that which he said. So Abagazil v'karamane, Rabbi Yochanan continued to be distraught over the passing of Reish Lakish, and therefore he rent his clothing. V'kalbachi, and he was crying. V'amar heicha at bar Lakisha, heicha at bar Lakisha. He was crying and bemoaning the fact that he lost Reish Lakish and saying, where are you, Reish Lakish? Where are you, Reish Lakish? V'kabat savach ad shaftate. He would scream this out and would say this over and over again until shaftate mineh, he lost his mind. Bar Rabbanan rachmei alei v'nach tafshei. Finally, the Rabbanan asked for rachamim and Rabbi Yochanan, and he passed away, again, out of this misery or being distraught over that which happened to Reish Lakish. It's interesting because we know throughout Shas, there are many stories about Rabbi Yochanan. We can see there are other stories of Rabbi Yochanan where he caused another Amora to pass away and then brought him back to life. We also know that he learned with Reish Lakish's son after Reish Lakish had passed away. We also know that Rabbi Yochanan had a very long life. He lived a very long time. That is both mentioned by the Gemara, as well as I always note for you that in Yerushalmi, Rabbi Yochanan is a prominent figure, and he interacts with Amoraim from 3-4 different generations. And so it's clear that he lived for a long time, but also makes it hard to figure out in the Yerushalmi Amoraim which generation they're from, because they all are talking to Rabbi Yochanan. So here the Gemara speaks about him being distraught and passing away. So it's not clear here how that is resolved or reconciled with the fact that Rabbi Yochanan lived a very long life and spent time with Reish Lakish's son afterwards. So first of all, it might have happened later in his life, this incident with Reish Lakish, as well as the fact that he might have lived for a long time afterwards, but the deterioration only happened when he got much older in terms of his missing Reish Lakish. But it's clear here that some time elapsed after that point in time, but it's clear here that Rabbi Yochanan is sorry about what he had done, because not only did it impact Reish Lakish, his being makpid, but his hakpada hurt himself in the end. And that's what Rabbi Yochanan is bemoaning over here, that in the end he really cut off his arm, his own arm, despite his face, because of the fact that he was upset at Reish Lakish. And we saw a similar story with the Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon before, when he got upset at the guy who was chutzpahdik towards him, and then he turns him over to the government and the guy's hanging on a tree, and then he regretted having done that. But these are people who are very sharp, tremendous Talmidei Chachamim, but they have a side to them which is very makpid and very sharp and rigid, and that side of them that's rigid causes them to, whether it's anger easily or be upset at people, and that has large impact because of the powers that they have. And sometimes they act quickly or too quickly with those powers, and they regret their actions. And you see that here with Rabbi Yochanan regretting that he had gotten upset at Reish Lakish and lost Reish Lakish over this issue. So now the Gemara almost took a pause in the story to deal with Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yossi, who had also taken up the same job as Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon. And then we had bumped into Eliyahu and Avi, who told him to run away. And then we had the stories about Rabbi Ishmael, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Yochanan about their largeness and their obesity. That led us into the stories about the unusualness of Rabbi Yochanan and his good looks. So that was the sidebar, and now we just finished that up, and we're going back to Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon. Where we had left off with him was that he was upset over this issue where he had turned over this individual who had been hanged by the government. Then he was told that the individual was problematic and he shouldn't be upset at all because he was a Rasha. And so Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon placates himself and says, look, are the Sfeikot Kach, certainly are those that are Vadai, it's okay that I'm doing this. And then he did the test in the room where they poured the fat out of him and they put it in the sun and nothing rotted. And then we see here that Vafilo Hachi lo samach Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon Adate, that he still was not reliant on that which he had placated himself. So even though he had all of these indications that what he had done was justified and that his behavior was fine, he still was not comfortable. And therefore, Kabul Alei Yisurei, he accepted upon himself Yisurim Mishal Ahava. Be'urta v'maychilei shittin namte. Every night they used to put under him 60 pieces of felt. The tzafra nagde mitute shittin mishichlei dama v'kibo. In the morning they used to pull out from under him 60 basins full of blood and pus from all the surim that came to him overnight. The machar avdalei debitu shittin mine lafto. In the morning his wife used to prepare for him 60 different types of delicacies. V'achiluhu, he would eat them ubari, and that would make him healthy. As the Balei Tosafot point out over here, I pointed out many times in Shas, the number 60 is not significant in of itself. It's just a representative number, which is 60 is a big number, a number that indicates a lot or a large number. The numbers that are used here and in the Torah, 60, 300, 400, those are numbers that you see repeatedly used. And therefore, you probably shouldn't take them literally. They are numbers that are used to indicate large or very big size. It's equivalent of what we would say today if you wanted to tell someone, well, there are a million of these things there. Obviously, there weren't a million of them. You're just trying to use a large number. The reason might be is because the Babylonian numbering system was a base 6 system, and 60 was the largest number. And that might be why 60 plays a prominent role both here and these types of stories, as well as in Kashrut. And we say 60 to 1 is batel tamo, that might be because it's the equivalent of saying like 1,000 to 1 or 1,000,000 to 1, because 60 was considered to be a very large number. Now obviously there is an implication of notein tam about flavor, but 60 to 1 might be such a big number that there is notein tam. And 60 was chosen because of its significance within their numeric system. And similarly here in these stories, the idea of the shitin, again, over and over again, is because this number is a significant number, but it's significant in the sense that it's a very large number. And so therefore, they won't take this literally, but figuratively that he had tremendous isurim, and he ate a lot in order to overcome that and become healthy. His wife did not allow him to go out to the Beit Midrash. So the Rabbanim wouldn't give him a hard time. If you remember in yesterday's daf, Rabbi Yoshua ben Karcho was upset at Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon and called him Chomez ben Yain because of the fact that he was turning over individuals to the government. And so the friction with the Talmidei Chachamim in all likelihood was because he was turning over their relatives to the government. He was turning over Jews from all walks of life who were not properly behaving. And as turning them over to the government, the Rabbanim were upset about his behavior. And that's what Rabbi Shua ben Karcho called him a moser, someone who was giving over people to the authorities. Be'urta amar lohu, in the evening, Rabbi Yochanan used to say to the Yisurim, Achai v'rayai, my brothers, my friends, bo, come. He would bring on the Yisurim to him. B'tzafra amar lohu, in the morning, and when he awoke, he would say, Zilu v'pnei bitul Torah, leave me because that's going to cause me to not be able to learn or have bitul Torah. That's the Gemara in Brachot says, how do you know whether they're Yisurim Shalava or not? One of the tests for Yisurim Shalava is that they're not Nevatel Torah. They don't cause you to not be able to learn Torah. So here you see that Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, these are Yisurim Shalava, because he controls when they come, and he can also dismiss them so it doesn't cause Bitul Torah. That's an indication that these are Yisurim Shalava. Yom Echad Shama Debitu, one day his wife overheard him inviting in the Yisurim. Amrele at kamaiti luhu ilaveich. You're the one who's inviting them in. Your suffering here is self-imposed. It's not something that you're really just suffering from. Kalit mamon shel beit abo. Your actions, your bringing on these isurim, wiped out all the money of my father's house. I mean that she obviously came from a wealthier family, and she brought in a large dowry, and it was all wiped out by Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon's isurim, where they had to provide all this felt for him to sleep on and all the basins of stuff that it was pouring out of him and then the food that he had to eat in order to get healthy. She got imrado. She rebelled, literally, but she basically packed out. Azal the Beit Nasha. She went back to her father's house. Beit Nasha is usually a reference to the wife's family after the passing of her father, meaning that's the house of her father. So whether her father was alive or not, it's not clear here, but she basically went back to her family because she couldn't handle this anymore. Sliku va'atu hanachshitin sapunai. So to replace his wife, these 60 sailors showed up. Elu shitin abdei. They brought him 60 servants. Kinikitu shitin anarchy. And each one of them was holding 60 money pouches. Va'abdulei shitin mine lafto. And they used to prepare for him these 60 delicacies. Va'achaluyu. And then he would eat them. So his wife was replaced by these individuals that all of a sudden it showed up. So it's interesting, both Rashi and the Bali Tosfot quote this midrash, that there were these sailors or seafarers that were caught up in a major storm. And because they were in a major storm, they were looking for salvation and called out in the name of Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Shimon, Hashem should protect them or should stop the storm. And they were saved because of the zchut of praying in the name of Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Shimon. So two things from that. One is that Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Shimon's tzidkut was not only known to the Chachamim, but clearly here was known to the Hamon Am, because of the fact that they're davening using his name or in his name. Number two is that they pledged, like the story in Yonah, these sailors pledged to take care of or go give this money in tzedakah to Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon, if they survived. So that was a part of their commitment in order to have Hashem save them. And that's why they showed up to save Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon. What interesting is that some note the fact that at the end of the Gemara in Kiddushim, when it speaks about professions that one should enter, it says that a person shouldn't enter these and these professions. The one profession which the Gemara speaks about positively is the Sapanim, is the sailors. Because the sailors are always Yirei Hashem. They always fear God because they're always exposed to the elements. They're always out at sea at risk. And therefore they can't afford to be atheists. They're always believers in Hashem. And so what might be interesting here is that all the other professions were suffering from Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon's work to take out or weed out the Rishayim, because every profession had its bad apples in it. The Sapanim, the sailors, who are all Yirei Hashem, didn't have any problem with Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon, because none of their people were taken away by him from their guild, because they were all Yirei Hashem. So that might also be how it connects to Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon, that the sailors were the ones who supported him. But anyway, they replace his wife in feeding him and making him healthy. Yom Echad, Amar La the Brato. One day, his wife says to their daughter, Zilu Baki Babuch. Go out and check out. Look into the well-being of your father. Mike Ovid, Hayidna. What is he doing today? What's going on with him? She, you know, still was in touch with him. We'll see later on that even after his passing, his wife is close with him. I don't know if she returned to him at some point, but it's clear that she had a good relationship with him for many years afterwards. Acha, so she came. Amar Lo, Rabbi Lozer, Rabbi Simon says to his daughter, Zili Amrei Limech, go tell your mother, Shalanu Gadol Mishilahem. Our reward is greater than their reward. Our reward is referring to himself and his family versus her family. Her family brought in the money and the physical goodies. His family was the spiritual side, the Torah side. So Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon is saying the Torah reward is much greater than the rewards of the money. So don't worry about the fact that I used up all your family's money. We still will have much greater reward. Kariya Nafshe, he said about himself from Eshet Chayo, Haitak Yaniot Socher, Mimerchak Tavil Achma. They were like boats that were carrying large merchandise, and they bring from afar their bread. It could be bread literally or bread in the figurative sense that they bring parnosa and they bring goods to the individuals. And so here, obviously, he's not speaking about his wife. He's speaking about this as an allegory for Torah. He says that Torah will bring us those ships laden with all these goodies and all the merchandise, meaning that there's tremendous reward for the Torah that we are engaged in. Achal v'shati ubari. He ate and he drank and he became healthy. Nafak the Beit Midrasha. And then he went out to the Beit Midrash. In the past, his wife had stopped him from going out to the Beit Midrash. She was protecting him. But now that his wife wasn't around anymore, he went out to the Beit Midrash. Aitu lekamei shitin minei damo. They presented before him 60 marot dam, blood that was seen by women, that wanted to know if it was blood of nida or not blood of nida, whether they were tmeim or tehorim. Terinu, he was mitaher all 60 of them. Have become Aranane Rabbanon. The Rabbanon were questioning his integrity with this. How could it be that he sees 60 types of dam and they're all tehorim? Seemed implausible. Famre, Salkadatcha, Leit Behu Chad Safek. They said to him, you don't think there's at least one of these damim that there is a safek about it, that there is some problem with it? Amarlu, Imkimotihu. If I am right here, you kulam zicharim. All these women should give birth to male children. Bimlav teine keva achat b'nehem. If I'm wrong, one of them, even one of them will have a female child. Now, as the Marsha points out, the reason being that zicharim don't have dam nida, they don't have a menstrual cycle, and the keva does. So the zachar, the birth of the zicharim, was a symbol or a siman that all the dam was dam tohor. If they have one nekeva who does have a menstrual cycle, this and he can become a nida, then that'd be indication that he made a mistake and one of the damim was tamei. Hayu kulam zicharim. And sure enough, every one of these women went home, conceived, and had a male child. So many of the Yochanim point out over here that this is Rabbi Yochanan the Shitato, that a woman becomes pregnant, samuch litzvilata, close to the time that she goes to the mikveh. And over here, they were checking whether they were completing their cycle of nida or not, and whether they were ru'im to go to tefillah. So therefore, it was at the time of their tefillah, the time near their conception, and they all gave birth to zicharim. Vasigluhu Rabbi Elazar al Shmei. And they called their children Rabbi Elazar after his name. Again, Rabbi Elazar, obviously it's not Rabbi Elazar because they were not Rebbeim, so maybe change the girsa to Elazar. But the children were named for Rabbi Elazar because he was the one who was mitaher them and allowed them to have these male children. Tanya, I'm a rabbi. Kama piria rivia bitla risha zo Yisrael. How much procreation did this evil person keep away from Yisrael? Rashi over here brings two interpretations of what risha'a is. One possibility is risha'a used for Malchut Romi, meaning that the Roman Empire caused this problem for us because the Roman Empire chased away Rabbi Shimon Yochai and Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon. They spent all those years in the cave, as well as the fact that the Roman Empire then pressed him into service to be a police officer. So both of those issues caused Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon to be absent from the Beit Midrash for so many years, and therefore he wasn't able to look at the Marot Dam to be mitaher them. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi is bemoaning the fact that Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon was absent from the Beit Midrash because of the Romans. The other interpretation Rashi brings is it was speaking about his wife, that his wife withheld him from coming to the Beit Midrash for good reason, because the Chachamim were not so happy with him and would have given him a very hard time. So even though she did it for the right reasons, he was calling Rishad, this terrible wife kept him out of the Beit Midrash, and she prevented him from seeing Marot Dam, and that caused there to be a lack of Piri Arivia amongst Klal Yisrael. There are many who want to interpret the word Risha'a over here as not being evil, but rather fear and confusion. So it's rather than being in a negative light, they show from places in Tanakh where the word Rasha or Risha is used, not to mean something evil, but rather to mean someone who is fearful or confused. And so over here too, she was taking care of him and therefore prevented him from coming from the Beit Midrash. And we'll see later on that Rabbi couldn't have thought that his wife was a Risha'a, because we're going to see later on that he interacts with her. When Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon was passing away, meaning that he was ill and was going to pass away, Amar la l'debitu, he says to his wife, that's why I said to you, it seems like they reconciled or his wife returned to him because he's speaking to his wife at his death. I know that the Rabbanon are angry at me. And they're not going to bury me in a proper manner. They're not going to take care of me in a proper manner. So first of all, this is an indication that giving proper kavod to someone who's being buried, the time of their burial, is a very significant thing. Here Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon was unwilling to allow himself to be buried by the Chachamim because he believed that they would not treat him properly and they wouldn't give him the proper kavod in his burial. It says, Ugnin balitai velo tidchalin minai. He says, put me up in the attic and don't worry about it. Don't worry about putting my body, after I passed away, the cadaver, putting it up in the attic. I tell you, put it there and nothing will happen. I won't rot. I won't decompose. You can keep me there in the attic. Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani, Ishtayali Imei de Rabbi Yonatan. So Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani says, the mother of Rabbi Yonatan told me, Dishtayala debitu de Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon. She heard it from the wife of Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon. Lo pachot mitamne sare lo tzfei me'esri mitartin shnin. He was there for no less than 18 years, no more than 22 years. Meaning that between 18 and 22 years, ognite bi'elita, she had him up in the attic staying there after he had passed away. There are those achronim want to suggest that he didn't really pass away, but he fell very ill, or the yisurim were getting to him, as if he passed away. But the simpler reading of the Gemara is that he had passed away, and she kept him up in the attic. Keva salikna, when she used to go up to the attic, me'anene le b'mazia, she used to check his hair, she used to, whether it's comb his hair or check his hair. Keva mishtamto benita mine, when any hair fell out, hava'ate dama, a little blood would come out, meaning showing that he was still intact and alive. So even any hair that fell out, there was a little blood that came out with it. Yom echad chazai richasha de kanofik me'une. One day she saw a worm emerging from his ear. Chalash datai. She then was distraught or upset over that, because now she was thinking that he was starting to decompose, because otherwise why is a worm emerging from his ear? Itchazli bechalma. He appeared to me in a dream. This is all Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon's wife telling this over to the mother of Rabbi Yonatan, who's conveying this to Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani. So this is all first-person story about what had happened. So he came to me in a dream. Don't worry about the fact that the worm is emerging from my ear. That's not because I'm decomposing or rotting. But there was one day where I heard someone denigrating a young Talmud Chacham, and I did not object strenuously enough or the way that I should have. And therefore, this is the punishment that this worm is coming out to indicate that I did something wrong. And so it's not an indication of the fact that I am rotting. If two people wanted to come for an adjudication, they used to stand by the door of the attic where Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon's body was. Each one of them would present their case. And then a voice used to come out from the attic. You are culpable. You are exonerated. It would paskin the case based on the presentation of the sides. That's why there are those achronim want to suggest that he was still alive. He was just in a weakened state because of the yisurim. And therefore he locked himself in the attic and he was still paskining halachot rather than him being passed away and paskining halachot, which is obviously difficult to understand. Yom echad havakam mitzaya debitu vade shivata. One point, his wife had gotten into an altercation with one of the neighbors. Amra lo, the neighbor says to the wife of Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, Tehei kebaalah, she should be like her husband, shelo nitan likvura, who never got buried. So already here you see people know about the fact that he's not buried, and it's becoming something that is negative because she's cursing his wife that she should meet the same fate that she is never brought to burial. So therefore, Amrei Rabbonan, kulehai vadai lavor achara. It's gone too far. This isn't normal anymore that he's been there for so long. It's time that we take care of him. Some say that Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai appeared to the Chachamim in a dream. Amarlo, pray da achad yeshli b'neichem. I have this young bird that's amongst you. V'yatem rotzim laviyal itzli. And you don't bring him to me. I mean, you don't bring him to burial next to me or allow him to ascend to Shamayim, because until the person is buried, the neshama doesn't ascend. It stays with the goof. So until the body is buried, then the neshama is able to come up. Azal Rabbanan Asukebe. The Rabbanan went to take care of Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon to bury him. Lo shavku bnei achbaraya. The people of Achbar, which is the name of a city, would not allow them to go there and remove Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon. The choshani davi noyim Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon bilitei. Because all those years that he was resting, sleeping in his attic, whether that means literally or figuratively, lo salik chayera lematayu. No wild animals ever attacked their city or came to their city. Meaning that he was sparing them from difficulty, or they saw him as being protection for their city. It's very interesting. Mishnah Avot says that because of Shvuat Shav or Shvuat Sheker, chayot ra'ot ba'ot le'olam, that causes wild animals to come to the city or to attack people. And they connect that to Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon's paskin halacha, in that the people used to come present their case, and then he used to paskin halacha. And they didn't need to take a shvua. Since they didn't need to take a shvua, there was no shvuat sheker in that location. Since there was no shvuat sheker, shvuat shav, the marsha explains that that's why they were protected from the Chaya Ra'ah, based on that Mishnah Navot, and that's why they wanted to keep Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon around. So they prevented them from taking him away. Yom Echad, Male Yom de Kippurim Ava. It was on Erev Yom Kippur, the Abitri Day. Everybody was busy getting ready for Yom Kippur, so they saw this as their window of opportunity to get Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon out of there because it was Erev Yom Kippur and nobody was paying attention. Shadur Rabbanan the Bnei Birei. So the Rabbanan sent to other villagers that were nearby, the people of Birei. Vaskuol Arsei, Vamtuya the Marato Davua. So they took out his mita, his bed on front of which he was laying, and they brought him to burial at the cave Davua of his father. Ashkahuhua la Achno, Dahadrala the Marato. They found there a serpent, a snake, that was blocking the entrance to the cave. It's very similar, we saw the word Achna back by the Tanur Shel Achnai, and the explanation of the snake, and that the snake wraps itself around and puts its tail into its mouth, blocking the entrance. Amrula, Achna, Achna, Pitchei Picha, Bikaneis Bene Tel Aviv. Open your mouth and let the son enter in with the father. Patach Luhu. And it opened up. Meaning that they said, open sesame, and it opened up. Now the image of the snake, once again here, the Achronim, the Marsha points out that the snake represents Mita, death. And that when someone dies, what we call Bi'itato Shel Nachash, by the bite of the snake, it means that someone died Blo Ba'avano, not because he sinned, but simply because that is the punishment to Adam HaRishon, which is that everybody has to pass away. That means that this person passed away not because they did something wrong, not because of their sins, but simply because Hashem ordains that every person passes away. And so it's a symbol of a person who's a tzaddik, and therefore the snake is representative of that. The snake on the cave is an indication of someone who is dying because they simply reached the age where they're going to expire, and not because they did something wrong. And remember that Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon was in the cave with his father, as well as that he suffered the Isurim that he brought upon himself. So he was Mimareik. He cleansed himself or took care of himself. And therefore the Marsha points out, how was it that Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon allowed himself not to be buried? There's a mitzvah in the Torah, really a lota say in the Torah, to leave a body not buried. So how did they violate that Isur Doraita? So the Marsha explains that the Chachamim say the reason that a body is put into the burial is because of Bizyona and Kapara. It's because it would be unsightly and embarrassment to the decomposition of the body is not kavod for the mate to be done in public, as well as kapara. It is a atonement for the individual. So Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon says, I don't worry about either of those. My body's not going to decompose, and therefore I'm not worried about bizyona, and I already had the isurim and the me'ara, and therefore I don't have to worry about kapara. And so therefore he felt it was fine to leave his body in state for all these years and not have it be buried because the reasons for burial didn't apply to him. So now here we see this fact that Rabbi respected Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon's wife because of the fact that now, Shalach Rabbi, the Daber Bishto. Rabbi sent to Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon's wife for a shidduch. He said, now that your husband's passed away, why don't you come and marry me? Shalchalei klish nishtamish bo kodesh, ishtamish bo chol. His wife was as sharp as he was. She says back to him, utensil that was used by Kodesh, meaning that my husband was a super tzaddik. You want to come and replace him? You who are mundane, you who are profaned, you should be the one to replace him? Unacceptable. Tamad Amrinan, over there they say this is a colloquialism. She knows isn't necessarily calling Rabbi this, but saying this is the common expression of the people. Batar de Maribeta Tala Zaine. In the location which the owner of the house hangs up his weapon or his utensils, Kulba, Raya, the coarse shepherd, Kulte Tala, will hang up his pouch. And the little shepherd is going to hang his pouch the same place where the owner of the house hangs up his utensils. It's inappropriate. And so too over here, it's inappropriate for me to marry you after I've been together with Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon. Shal Chula, Nehit B'Torah Gadol Mimeni, Avav Masim Tovim, Mi Gadol Mimeni. He goes, all right, I accept the fact that in Torah he was greater than me. But with Masim Tovim, maybe he's not greater than me. Maybe you should give me a chance. Shachalei, she sends back to him, B'Torah mi gadol mimcha lo yadana. She says, I have no idea whether he was greater than you in Torah or not. But now that you told me, now I know that you think, and that the fact is that he was greater than you in Torah. But Masim yadana da kabilei isure. By Masim, I know he's greater than you because he accepted upon himself Yisurim Sha'ava, and we know the stories before that she was involved in his Yisurim Sha'ava, and she knew very well what he undertook. And therefore, she said, for sure, his Masim Tovim are greater. B'Torah Mahi. Why did Rabbi say that Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon was greater than him in Torah? How did he know that? Or where was this from? The truth is that we're going to see now that they were peers. Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Yehuda Nasi were childhood friends, childhood peers, and Talmidei Chachamim. And therefore, Rabbi knew Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon very well. And that's this story here. Ki chavu yadfei Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, Rabbi Shua ben Karcha. When Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and Rabbi Shua ben Karcha were sitting in the Beit Midrash, remember we bumped into Rabbi Shua ben Karcha before, when he called Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon Chometz ben Yayin. So he was, Rabbi Shua ben Karcha was familiar with Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, his father, as well as with Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, the father of Rabbi. They were all peers, and they were teaching Torah to the youngsters. The youngsters, these Rebbeim, Shua ben Karcha and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, they were sitting on the Asaf Saleh, Yafei Kamayu and Aro. In front of them were the Talmidim, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi. They were both on the floor in front of them learning. Makshu Mifarku. They were asking questions, answering questions. They were clearly head and shoulders above anybody else who was there. Amrei Mimehem Anushutim. So the fathers, the Talmidei Chachamim, the Beit Midrash, say, we're drinking their waters. Vehem Yoshvim Al Gavi HaKarka. And they're sitting on the ground. They're teaching us Torah. And meantime, they're sitting on the ground and we're on the benches. Abdullahu Safsale. They made for them benches to elevate them, basically indicating that they were now elevated to the status of Talmidei Chachamim. Askinu, so they brought him up onto the Safsalin. Amar lehem Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, preida achat yesh li b'neichem. I have this young bird amongst you. V'atem mevakshim la'abdohim eni. And you want to rid me of him. Meaning he was afraid of the ayin hara. For him being pulled out from amongst the other Talmidim and singled out, he was afraid that that would lead to an ayin hara. And that would cause him to lose his son, Rabbi. So he didn't want him to be singled out in any way. Achtu the Rabbi. So they demoted Rabbi back down to the floor. Amalan Rabbi Yoshua ben Karcha, Mishal Yeshlo Av Yechyeh, the one who has a father to protect them, he will live. Meaning Rabbi is protected by his father, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Umisha Endo Av Yamut, Rabbi Lazar Rabbi Shimon, whose father, Rabbi Shimon Yochai, already passed away. He should die, meaning that he'll be subject to the Ayin Hara, and nobody will protect him. Achtu Nami La Rabbi Lazar Rabbi Shimon. So they demoted Rabbi Lazar Rabbi Shimon back to the floor again. Chalash Date. He was despondent, upset about this. Amar Kachashvitu Le Kavati. You think I'm a peer of Rabbi's? So it's not clear what Rabbi Lazar Rabbi Shimon was exactly thinking. It might have been that he might have thought that Rabbi asked for him to be demoted and brought back down with him. So that might be why he was upset. But it's clear that Rabbi Lazar Rabbi Shimon thought of himself as being on a higher level than Rabbi. And therefore, when Rabbi was demoted, he didn't think he should be demoted. And when they demoted him afterwards, he was upset by the fact that they made him appear with Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. Ada Uyoma. Until that day, Kiyavu Amar Rabbi Milto. Whenever Rabbi presented something to Beit Midrash, Ava Misayile Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon. Elazar Rabbi Shimon was supportive of him. He backed him up, or he brought proofs to it. Mikan Veilech, from that moment forward, Kiyavu Amar Rabbi Yeshli Lashiv. When Rabbi used to say, I have something to say, or I have a question, Amalei Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon would jump in. He would interject. Kach v'kach yesh lecha la'ashif. This is what you are going to ask. This is the question you're going to ask. Zohi tshuvatcha hashta hekeftanu tshuvot chavilot. And then he would give the answer to the question that Rabbi was going to present. He says to him, you're now surrounding us with questions and problems she'en behem mamash, that have no basis or have no substance to them. It's not that Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon acted differently now. He was asking the questions before, and he was answering the questions before. But before, he used to do it in support of Rabbi, which means that he would allow him to ask the question, and then he would work with them through the question and the answer. But now he would preempt the question, and he would say, this is your question, and these are the answers. So even though he was doing the same thing, he did it in a manner that was slightly different, that made it offensive to Rabbi, or made it clear that he was, in some way, denigrating Rabbi, because of the slight of kavod that he felt that they had demoted him back to be on par with Rabbi. Chalash dati de Rabbi. Rabbi was upset by what Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon was doing and the way that he was speaking to Rabbi. Ata amrlei la'avua. So Rabbi goes and reports this to his father and tells his father about what's going on and that he's upset about it. So amrlei b'ni ayir alecha. Don't worry about it. Shu'ari ben ari. He's the lion, the son of a lion. Vata Ari ben Shual. But you're a lion, the son of a fox. What he was saying to him is that Rabbi Elazar of Rabbi Shimon's erudition and his tremendous chuchmah, it's not coming because he had more hatmada than you. It's not because he was smarter than you. It's just that he had a better father. And his father was a stronger Talmud Chacham, and therefore he's stronger now. Had you had a stronger father, this is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, his father, speaking about himself, had you had a stronger father, you would have been on the same level as Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon. So don't be down on yourself with regards to this, because it's not your fault. It's your inheritance, in a sense. It's your morasha that's coming from your father that is the deficit. And in this way, he placated Rabbi to say that Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon was not so great. But what you see from the story is that Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon's Torah far exceeded the Torah of Rabbi. And that's what Rabbi said before, that Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon's Torah was greater than my Torah. And then his wife said, I didn't know that, but now that you tell me that, that's true. But I also think his Masim Tovim were greater for sure, because that I do know about. And therefore, she refused the hand of marriage from Rabbi and stayed a widow and did not marry Rabbi, or did not take up Rabbi's offer to marry him. Over here you have that Rabbi and Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon were children together in the Beit Midrash. They grew up together. They were peers. They learned together for many years. Later on, after the time of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, where there was clearly problems with the interactions with the Roman government, and that's why Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon had to run away to the cave, during the time of Rabbi and Antoninus, the relationships with the Roman government were much more pleasant, cordial at that time, because Rabbi has a very good relationship with the ruler Antoninus. And so at that point in time is where really it seems to me there was a big split between Rabbi, who stayed with the Chachamim, and Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, who was, in a sense, pushed into service of the Roman government. And in that time period, the Roman government used to bestow kavod on people, kavod that they didn't necessarily want, but kavod on people and put them into jobs that they didn't necessarily want, because the government needed people to do these jobs. But these jobs also were something you had to pay the government for. They were privileges that were given to you, because those privileges then allowed you powers, the ability to take money or collect money from others, and the government forced you to pay for that privilege. So many people ran away from that kavod or that privilege, and we saw that with the story of Eliyahu, that both his father, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yossi ran away from the bestowing of this kavod or the type of honor that was granted to them. Blazer Rabbi Shimon didn't run away, and that's the stories that we had here with Rabbi Blazer Rabbi Shimon, and that caused the rift between him and the Chachamim. And also some probably a rift between him and Rabbi, although Rabbi, you can see here, still tremendously respected Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon and his Torah, and everybody understood that he was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, and that he was one of the Gdolei Ador. And we see that both from the Rabbanon that acknowledged that and Rabbi acknowledging that, but also we saw the Hamunam had some feeling like that because of the fact that they were davening in the name of Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, because they knew of his tremendous tzidkut, his tremendous righteousness. There are three people who are extremely humble. And these are they. Abba, my father, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Bnei Beteira, the children of Beteira. Yonatan ben Shaul. And Yonatan in Tanakh. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel had Amran. Shimon Gamliel is the story here where he calls himself a Shual. He elevates Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai and says that Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon is the Ari ben Ari. And he says to his own son, Rabbi, that you are a Nari ben Shual. So he calls himself a Shual, despite the fact that he was one of the leading Tamidei Chachamim of the generation. He was the Nasi of the generation. Nevertheless, he tempered his standing by calling himself a Shual and not a Nari. Bnei Beteira is in a story in the Gemara in Pesachim, that when Hillel came to Eretz Yisrael from Bavel, Hillel was able to answer questions regarding the Korban HaPesach. And the Bnei Beteira were so impressed with Hillel's erudition that they appoint him to be the Nasi. Tamar Maru Shivo Barosh Uminu al Nasi Alehem. That they made him into the Nasi. Even though the Bnei Beteira were the beholders of the Nasiut, they deferred to Hillel and made him into the Nasi because of his erudition. Yonatan Mitchell, the Carmelite of David. Yonatan Mitchell, because when he proposes that there be a joint leadership, Tatim Locha Yisrael, you'll be the king over Israel. And I will be the second in charge. I'll be your assistant. So despite the fact that right now his father Shaul is the king and Yonatan is the crown prince, he offers the kingship to David and says, I'll be your right-hand man. I'll be the second in charge. Samimai, how do you know that that was really out of anava? Dilma, he read the tea leaves. Yonatan ben Joel, the chazan, the garir, alma boter David. Maybe he saw that the people were following after David, and he realized that it was a fait accompli, that the people were going to anoint David as the king, and he was not going to be the king. So he looks at that and says, my best scenario is to make David the king, and I'll be second in charge. As Rashi points out, he didn't know yet that he was anointed by Shmuel. That information wasn't public. But he did see that the people were already drawn after David, and so he knew that there was a wave of change that was coming across that might make David the king, irrespective of the fact that he was the crown prince. So maybe he just was practical rather than being humble. B'nei B'tei Ranami. So today they were being practical. The Chazul the Hillel da'adif minayu. They saw that Hillel was more erudite than them. He knew to answer the questions. And therefore, they appointed him as the Nasi, because that was the only thing they could do. Otherwise, they'd be embarrassed that every time people were asking questions to Hillel, and they were the Nasiim. El Rabbi Shimon Gamliel vaday anvantan hava. But Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, there was no reason for him to say that. And he's clearly a humble individual for putting himself down in respect to or relationship to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and telling his son that his son is an Ari ben Shual, which is interesting. He was willing to call his son an Ari. He uplifts his son even though he puts himself down. And so therefore, that is a tremendous display of anava by Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Hey, we're going to stop here 8 lines down on the top of Pehei Amud Aleph.